Greetings, June Squad. Jay here, master of all things nerdy. With me, as always, is my stalwart companion, defender of the nerd faith, Lord Commander... It's just me. It's just me, myself, and I. Chris was not able to join me for this one, but I wanted to do very badly a review of the new X-Men 97 cartoon on Disney+. And we're as of this date, March 27th, we are on episode 3 of this series, and I cannot say enough positive things. So let's dive right in, and let's listen to Jay's review of the new X-Men 97 Disney Plus cartoon. If you're in my age bracket, which I'm going to be 46 this year, the Fox Kids Saturday mornings was a big part of your childhood, I guess in my case, adolescence. Nerd! All right, it took me a while to grow up. Get off my back. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, it was all about, in the 90s, Saturday mornings, Fox Kids, you had Power Lineup, you had Spider-Man the Animated Series, you had Batman the Animated Series, you had The Tick, you had Eek the Cat, you had Life with Louie, but more importantly, you had the X-Men. Up until that point, to my knowledge, there had only been one attempt at an X-Men cartoon. It was something that had just been released as a pilot. I think it was released somewhere around the late 1980s. I think it was done mainly so that Marvel could retain the distribution rights, and it was called Pride of the X-Men, and it was made up of the team that was largely popular at the time. Not a bad episode. Strangely, if you can find it on YouTube and watch it, Wolverine is Australian, curiously. Now, is this, I don't want to go all Nostradamus on you, but did they know somehow that an Aussie would later popularize Wolverine? I don't know. It remains one of those mysteries. But up until that point, there had not really been any X-Men representation in animation. And then the 1990s hits, and we get X-Men, the Animated Series. Oh, since we've had several X-Men series, but this was the one that I think most people that are fans of X-Men and animation, this is the one that people think of. And I mean, if anything, you have that iconic intro music. You know, oh, what the hell? I was like, oh, I'm not going to do this, but how can you not invoke it? And it's that bum 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 bum. Okay, I'm not going to subject you to the whole thing. Actually, if you want to listen to great cover of it, look up Two Violins X-Men Theme. I can't remember the artist's names, but they do this kick-ass version of this theme. I mean, never before has there been, apart from maybe Batman the Animated Series, I don't think that there has been a better intro song for a cartoon. So, back in the 90s, we had the X-Men cartoon. I think it ran for approximately 5 seasons. And this was during the time of peak X-Men, man. I mean, this was around the time that Jim Lee had he was starting on the new run of X-Men. This was Marvel for years had had the Uncanny X-Men running as the lone comic series of the X-Men. And then, I don't know, 1991, 1992, they release a sister book just simply entitled X-Men that was drawn, I think it was written by Chris Claremont. You can correct me if in the comments. I'm not the best historian when it comes to comics, but Jim Lee was the artist. And this was his team. I mean, this was the team that is prominently featured in the cartoon. It was slightly pared down. The original team in the comic book consisted of Cyclops, Jean Grey, Wolverine, Beast, Gambit, Rogue, Jubilee, Angel or Archangel by this point, Psylocke, Bishop, Colossus, Storm, Forge, And it was one of the most successful runs in Marvel. And so this cartoon was capitalizing on that, and it was a much more pared down version of the team. You had Cyclops, Jean Grey, Rogue, Jubilee, Wolverine, Beast, and Gambit. So no Archangel, although he was featured in one of the episodes. No Psylocke. I think she was featured in one of the episodes. All of the other ones had, they became the remaining teammates from the comic that weren't featured as part of the main team were relegated to kind of bit roles. And the cartoon was phenomenal. I mean, for a cartoon, I mean, given for what it was, you watch it now and it's got some wonderfully corny moments, but it was the X-Men, and no one had done anything quite like this before, and they were adapting all of the best stories of that time. You were all of the villains that were hot right at that moment. You had Omega Red, who was like this evil Russian version of Wolverine, but instead of claws, he had these unbreakable tendrils that would come out of his hands. And you had the acolytes, who were like Magneto groupies, and you had Sabretooth, who had been a long standing villain in the X-Men mythology. But it was, I mean, this the X-Men cartoon in the 90s was where it was at, and so. As I said, since then we've had several X-Men cartoons of, I think all fairly good quality, but then we get this announcement that Disney is going to be rebooting this X-Men series, and I guess when I first heard about it, I was like, okay, whatever. To be honest, and I it's sad for me to admit this, but I don't get excited like I used to by superhero media. It's, I don't think I've really been consistently excited for Marvel projects. Probably, it's sad, but it's probably been about 2 years. The last movie that really, I was so excited for and thoroughly enjoyed was Spider-Man No Way Home. And I don't know if other people feel the same way that I do, but I've just felt that since No Way Home happened, really kind of the sort of the end of the Infinity Saga and sort of the epilogues to that, the quality of Marvel projects has been highly variable. A few standout gems here and there, to name a few. Loki, I think was pretty solid. I enjoyed Moon Knight, but I think I don't know if I'm in the minority for that, but I really haven't been excited by a lot of comic book projects. So I wasn't super enthusiastic when I heard about this X-Men reboot. I was like, okay, well, that sounds interesting. It felt like really just kind of a nostalgia cash grab. I have to tell you now, having watched three of these, I have never been more pleasantly surprised. It's like I put it on episode one about a week ago, and it was just like that. All of a sudden I'm 14 again, and it's Saturday morning, and that's the mark of some great media. I mean, that's great entertainment, great storytelling. It was just, I thoroughly enjoy this series. So let's get into it then. So the Fox Kids staple returns. It's got a strong first three episodes that it's going to delight newcomers and fans of the original. I mean, right from the first moment of the opening of the show, you hear that iconic bump, 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 bump. Now, I'm sorry, I can't think of it and not hum it. It's like some sort of weird Tourette's that I have going on. And you can't bring back that cartoon and not have that intro. So we get the new intro, awesome music. It's beat for beat, almost a copy of the original intro credits with just some slight updates, because the roster of the team is shifted a little bit now. We've got Magneto on the team. Oh, so before I go further, I should say, spoilers ahead, I won't light spoilers. I'm not going to try to ruin too much of the show if you haven't watched it, but I am going to be talking some spoiler territory. I don't think it's a huge spoiler to say that Magneto is now a part of the team. That's been advertised in the promos for the show. It's been widely talked about. So I don't. You see Magneto now in his new costume, kind of signifying his transition away from being a global terrorist to now being part of the X-Men team. But we get the updated intro, and it's just such a delight to hear the same chords, but now we've kind of got a new song, so to speak. Because this show, in my opinion, it's not. Yeah, is it trading on nostalgia? Of course it is. Of course, but if that is all that it were, if that were just basically retreading the same ground and giving us just the same show, essentially, I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much as I have. I mean, this show really is a continuation of that original series, and in my opinion, improves. It improves upon the original series. It's grown up. If there can be such a thing, it's the cartoon grown up. And so, you know, if you didn't happen to watch the original series, the first episode does a good enough job of catching you up through flashbacks. Why do I think the show is better in some respects than the predecessor? And granted, we're only three shows in. That's my opinion now. Perhaps it'll change as it continues. Hopefully they're able to maintain this level of quality. So first off, the writing on the show just feels more mature. This feels, you know, the old X-Men cartoon. It just, you watch it, it feels like a children's cartoon. And then, of course, it should have been because it was on Saturday mornings. This, I wouldn't go so far as saying it's an adult cartoon. This is not like South Park or Archer or even like the HBO Spawn show or even Invincible. It is, I would place it somewhere in the range of like a Batman the Animated Series. And one of the things that show did really well was strike a balance between having things that were entertaining for kids while also having some themes and moments that adults can appreciate. And kind of like, this is going to be a weird comparison, but kind of like the old Bugs Bunny cartoons. You know, people that I've known for years, my father, who's a big fan of the Warner Brothers cartoons, has always said, you know what was so great about them is that you could enjoy it on two levels. Like, children enjoyed Bugs Bunny cartoons because you had him doing wacky things like hitting Elmer Fudd over the head with an anvil. But then there were moments of there were jokes that went right over the kids' heads that the adults could appreciate. I'm not saying that X-Men 97 is a funny show by any means, but it has those moments in there that I think the adult fans, the ones like, you know, old farts like me that watched the show during its original run, will be able to appreciate now, and it's enough to keep me engaged. We just having watched episode 3, I got the feels. You know, I got the feels. Episode 3 introduces a storyline from the 80s that it's a tearjerker. You have a character in the show dealing with a huge moment that turns his world upside down and having to deal with just a crippling loss. And that's all I'm going to say about that. The show dips into mature themes, and it's, you know, this is not just about the fact that, you know, they're going to drop a shit or a hell or any, you know, any of that big boy language in there. That's not what I'm talking about, although the show does do that. Don't worry, guys, if you're listening at home, this is okay for you to watch with your kids. There's no F-bombs or anything like that. I might go as far to say that the show maybe needs like a PG. I won't go as far to say a PG-13 rating if we were using that scale. Incidentally, my show, probably not good to listen to with your kids because I have no compunctions about dropping an F-bomb here or there. But yeah, the show's writing is extremely entertaining. It feels like X-Men from the cartoon grown up. you know, a series that both young and old can enjoy. Second, we get some great character moments, starting with Cyclops. And all right, this is I'm fanboying here because it's not so much that we do see some character development. The show picks up after Charles Xavier has not died exactly, but he's been removed from the picture. At the conclusion of the original series, he had fallen into a coma and was taken into outer space, hopefully to get, space vaccines or something, whatever, to cure him. Anyways, functionally just not there, not present to lead the X-Men, and so it falls to Cyclops, aka Scott Summers, to lead the team. Okay, so let me say this about that. I have probably, many out there, I have never liked Cyclops as a character. I've found him to be rather boring, at least in the ways that he's been portrayed to me. No offense to the actor James Marsden. He's a very talented actor. There was nothing in any of the original X-Men trilogy movies that made me find him particularly interesting. Even less interesting in the second trilogy that came out when he was introduced. He just wasn't an interesting character. And we finally get some great moments with this character where he's showing personality and he's a badass. I feel so good for fans of Cyclops because I think this is the character, this is the way this is the way you always wanted him represented, at least in episode one. I hope they continue it. I haven't seen as much of that since episode one. We're into episode three now, but he gets some awesome badass moments. And, you know, up until this point, you know, Wolverine had always been, you know, people love Wolverine. So he gets the cool lines, he gets the cool fights. And, you know, we get the sense almost like, you know, a Cyclops is the Captain America of this team. He's a leader. He's a badass, and that's, I realize I'm fanboying, but it's the truth. You get some wonderful character arcs as well with people like Jean Grey and with Storm, and in episode number two, we see the beginning of this arc for Storm, where because of various events, she loses her powers and now has to deal with that loss. And the rest of the season is going to see the follow through of that development. And they just have some great moments of dialogue between the characters that make them feel more fleshed out and like people than just kind of two-dimensional characters. I thoroughly enjoy that. Morph, Morph is now back on the show. For those of you that remember, Morph had a presence in the first couple of episodes, and then you don't really see him again. He pops up kind of here and there as a character, and he's sort of the comic relief of the show. I was going to comment about this. So apparently, you know, as always with all things involving the internet, there was outrage. I guess because someone somewhere, maybe one of the writers or one of the showrunners, made a comment. I don't know if it was the voice actor, that Morph was now going to be non-binary. Okay, for those of you not aware what that means, non-binary is a term used to describe people that really don't feel inside like they're male. They don't really feel inside like they're female. Neither one of those definitions feels kind of right to them, and so they say, well, you know, I don't identify with either of those things. And I just I'm sure there's been tons of comments about this matter, and I've heard, as I said, outrage on the internet over it. People saying things like, "Oh, the X-Men, everything's got to be woke now." And you know, this is my take on what woke means when people say that. In that sense, I I like to assume, give people the benefit of the doubt, assume the good in all people. So I think sometimes when people say, oh, this is too woke, and saying it in a pejorative way, in an angry way, that what they mean by that is people don't like to feel preached to. And I think that, I think that's what they're saying with this, is that some people feel that shows get too preachy to them about, oh, you should believe this, you should believe that. I tend to see it a little bit differently. I mean, I think that, I certainly don't like when, like, a message is sort of clumsy in how it's handled, not because that offends me as a person, or I feel I'm being preached to, more so it just offends me as a consumer of entertainment. I like good storytelling. And so when something feels a little too on the nose, or is being handled kind of clumsily, that more just upsets me as a viewer, because I'm like, oh, this is really kind of, this doesn't feel natural in the story. So my opinion about this, first of all, I don't think being non-binary is mentioned at any point in any of the first three episodes. So I think getting that angry about something that someone said, that's not even included in the show yet, and not even appears to be a main focus of the character, is a bit of an overreaction. And I just think it's like, you know, we have so much going on in our world right now to be upset about. You know, we have to worry about climate change, the rise of war, rampant pollution, dogs and cats living together. It's like, we don't need one more thing to put on the pile to be angry about just because somebody said, you know, in their headcanon that a character is non-binary. And even if it's not headcanon, who cares? It's a fantasy series. And to quote a great artist and friend of the podcast, Tana Ford, maybe this just isn't for you then, if this bothers you. But these are not my thoughts. I'm kind of parroting the thoughts of others. And that is, I got news for you guys. If you think this is woke, the X-Men have always been woke. I mean, that's what it's about. If you've paid any attention to the series, it's the premise of the story is a group of people that happen to be different from the majority and are persecuted for it. I mean, fill in the blank. I mean, African American people, Native American people, Jewish people, Irish immigrants, gay people. I mean, you can insert literally any oppressed group. I mean, that's what the X-Men are. They're a metaphor for the oppressed person, for the other. And it seems obvious to me. I mean, I'm not sure if that, maybe it's not obvious to everybody else, but I mean, that's kind of the way that I look at it. And so if this upsets you, the idea that, the show is trying to address social issues. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it is, but it always has. And so is things like Star Trek and the Twilight Zone and like any kind of decent, science fiction. So I don't really care about that at all. It's not addressed. And even if it is addressed, my only hope is that it just needs to fit the narrative. You know, if you can tell me a good story, tell me a good story that gets me thinking. If you can do that, then you've won me over. I don't care what, if you have a message that you want to say. That's another thing that I don't quite understand is when people say, oh, well, they just want to get their message. They're trying to impose their message on us. Isn't that what storytelling is? I mean, isn't that why we write stories? Isn't that why we write poetry, why we write songs? It's because we have a message and we're trying to put it out there and we're trying to get get people thinking about it and talking about it. And so if people are thinking and talking about the message that you've put out there, well then, haven't they done their job? I mean, maybe it's a message you don't like, which, I mean, that's fine. That's fair. And again, I'll see Tana Ford. Maybe it's not for you. Maybe this is just not for you, and that's okay. You cannot like the message, but I have never understood the criticism of, oh, you know, trying to impose politics or commentary or whatever. That's what entertainment is. So if you want comic book fantasy that does not have any sort of moral or lesson or anything like that. I don't know. I mean, go read Garth Ennis. I'm not trying to throw shade at Garth Ennis, okay? I love the TV show The Boys. Garth Ennis is a very talented writer. I don't find particularly the series of The Boys. I don't really see a message in there. So it's a lot of superhero violence, I think, for the sake of superhero violence and just kind of cheeky, naughty fun, which is fine. And there's no, I don't. If there's a message in there, I think I'm missing it. But anyhow. Yeah, I think that we have some great character moments. I love how this wasn't in my original points, but I thought a bit. I love how the first episode deals with Sentinels, and how it mirrors the first episode of the original series, which is Night of the Sentinels, and it's a great. It's a great callback. It's a great moment to. Also, we get a sort of audience POV member in Sunspot. I think that's his name. So the young Portuguese boy that the X-Men end up rescuing from the Friends of Humanity, which is it's the hate group that is trying to. Eliminate mutants, get them out of our society, sort of like the Ku Klux Klan of this world. And, you know, that's great. It very, that in some ways mirrors the first episode, was it in the first episode, the Jubilee? I think, no, it was Jubilee. Jubilee was the, originally the audience POV character entering into this world of X-Men, and now she's established as an X-Man, and so we need a new audience POV character, and so we get Sunspot. I don't remember his non-code name. He doesn't start using his code name in the show. He's extremely extremely reluctant mutant. I thought actually a really kind of nice portrayal of sort of like the. Someone that is part of a minority group that is oppressed and part of the sort of the wealthy class and is like, hey man, look, I'm not like these other guys. I'm one of the good ones. That's actually a line out of the first episode. Like, why are you hassling me? And it really kind of hits home the point that, you know, to Sunspot and to the audience that oppression against a class oftentimes doesn't see money or it's just no, you're part of that group and you're different from us and so we hate you. So solid, you know, solid storytelling, some great great moments in this first episode and indeed the second and third episode. So we get some. Again, I'm fanboying, but again, it's my show. You don't like that? Suck it. We get some great callbacks to some classic X-Men stories in this. Some are little Easter eggs, and some are storylines that now they're addressing in the show. What I find so interesting is that they're addressing stories that were popular in the 80s, but they're using the 90s team to play them out. I mean, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. You could play these out with any characters. I kind of find that interesting. But one of which is the, I don't know, in wrestling, I know it's called a heel turn when a good guy turns into a bad guy. I don't know if Chris were here, he'd be able to tell me what the opposite of that is. But you a hero turn, I don't know if that, sorry if I'm butchering that, but you see Magneto getting a hero turn. He is now for reasons they haven't quite explained, and maybe they'll get into it. Maybe they won't. Magneto has sort of renounced terrorism and wants to walk a path similar to Charles Xavier, and so this sees him actually moving into the X mansion. And becoming a leader for the X-Men. I mean, this is a character that had been an antagonist of theirs all throughout the series. And he was never, And the great thing about Magneto as a villain is he's never been that mustache-twirling, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha, bad guy. Even in the movies, he's never been that. He's always been that villain that, like, you understand. Like, I don't agree with what you're doing, but I understand why you're doing it. You know, I think, you know, adequate comparisons would be like, Killmonger from Black Panther. You don't agree with him, you're gonna fight against what he's doing, but you understand his motivations, and those are always the best villains. And so Magneto's never been like a full-on wahahaha villain, and so it's believable that he could move a little bit closer to center and become a, I don't know what it is in Dungeons and Dragons, what is it, chaotic good or chaotic neutral or lawful evil, or I don't know, I really need to stay in my lane. I'm losing my voice, I don't know if you can hear it, so hopefully it'll hold out to the end of this review. But one of the things they bring back from the 80s is Magneto had this purple costume, and it was one that is associated during the, you know, his time where he was with the X-Men. And I never really thought about this before, but every time that you see Magneto in the original series, when he's in the red costume, he's wearing a helmet. And now he's wearing this purple suit with the big corny M on the front, which you got to wonder, it's like, what is that about? Like, the guy has his first initial on his suit, but he doesn't wear the helmet. And I never gave that much thought before when I saw it in the comics. And I don't know if this comes from the comics. I don't know if this was created for the show, but there's a beautiful moment of dialogue where he's explaining, he's holding the helmet and he's contemplating and he's saying, you know, I wore this to keep Charles out of my mind, to protect myself. And now with kind of this transformation I've gone through, I don't need it anymore. And so using that helmet as a symbol, as sort of a divider, if you will, or a barrier, as a wall, is like, no, you don't come any further than this. And now casting that aside, I don't know, am I making too much out of this? Am I full of shit? I might be full of shit. I know that's certainly possible. If you think I'm full of shit, leave me a comment. But I think that was just a beautiful moment of writing. So we get that. We see the kind of the furthering of the relationship between Rogue and Gambit, which I never made it to the end of the original series. But from what I remember from the original series, they always had sort of a will they, won't they, are they dating, are they not dating? Rogue was always, you know, Rogue, you know, character that can't touch anyone without it proving deadly. So it was always trying to keep people away. And now this show is like, nope, it's on. Like, full force, these two are in a relationship. I'm not sure how. I don't know how the mechanics of that would work quite. But yeah, they're a thing now. But now you throw Magneto into it, and they're kind of alluding in the story that Magneto and Rogue have kind of a bit of a past. And, dun dun dun, for some reason, he is able to touch her without dying. So he is able to somehow neutralize Rogue's powers. And so they're setting it up, it would seem, they're setting it up as a bit of a love triangle, possibly between Magneto, Rogue, and Gambit, which of course, again, is something out of the comics. Yeah, so I'm looking at the time. I'm already at about over half hour, which is a little bit longer than I had wanted this review to be. One last thing about it: the beautiful animation. You know, beautiful animation in the show. You know, and hey, they got that mouse money, man. So they're gonna have, of course, the animation's gonna be better than what they had back in those Fox days, but they've just got some gorgeous animation. This show has really sort of restored my faith in superhero media, at least for the animation. You know, as I'm sitting here, I, you know, I've seen episodes 1, 2, and 3. I may go on and go a little more in depth with some more kind of heavy spoiler reviews of episodes 1, 2, and 3, kind of dissect them a little bit more as far as the Easter eggs go. But as I'm sitting here, I can't wait for episode 4. And it's such a great feeling to be excited about a show again. I mean, that's such a great feeling. And I you know, if you feel that way, then hey, good for us. Good for us. We are back, baby. We are back. Now all Kevin Feige's got to do is get his shit together, start producing some quality movies again, and we'll be back on track. But anyway, this has been Jay for the Just Us Nerd Podcast, all by my lonesome, and this, you've been listening to my X-Men 97 review. Do you have an opinion about this? Please let me know. Drop me a line on a comment on the SoundCloud page. Give me we're on Instagram. I'm always posting toy art and artwork on the Instagram page. Leave us a comment on our Facebook page. I started this podcast with Chris because we wanted to have a discussion with other comic fans. So if you have an opinion, I even if it disagrees with mine, I would like to hear it. So thank you so much for listening. Hopefully I'll be back with another episode with my partner soon. All right, take care and have a good night. Bye.